This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The meetings have now wrapped up, and the key agreements that Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, and Emmanuel Macron, the French President, that they came to with regards to the migrants is that it needs to have, on the first place, a Europe-wide agreement.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. We'll have full details coming up. Also, the World Health Organization says the Ebola outbreak in Congo has largely been contained. And Eritrea's president will be sending a delegation to Ethiopia to discuss a peace deal negotiated in 2000. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Juba residents and internally displaced people sheltering inside a UN-run camp say they hope the Kir Mashar meeting in the Ethiopian capital will end the fighting. Residents say they want the two leaders to overcome their differences so peace is restored in South Sudan. Residents also say they hope the two will open their hearts and listen to one another. Nabil Biagio has more from Juba.
Juba resident Abor Mabien Nial says she hopes the face-to-face meeting between President Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar, the first in 2 years, will help bring the two men closer together.
I would like Riek Machar and Salva Kiir to reconcile and change the situation to the better, because right now people are suffering very badly.
So if they can hear our voice, that is, they make peace and change the situation, and then later we can vote.
Nial is referring to national elections that were supposed to take place in South Sudan this year, according to a previous peace agreement signed by the warring parties. But since the cessation of hostilities agreement has not been upheld, those elections seem to be in doubt. Juba resident Dud Dao urges the two leaders to open their hearts in order to understand one another.
I'm glad actually to hear that our president has just left today to Addis Ababa to meet Dr. Riek Machar. And the only thing I could just say is for our leaders to understand themselves. First, they should understand themselves before they reach out to their demands.
Anthony Lubang, who lives in Juba's Nyakure neighborhood, says the Kiir Machar meeting is an opportunity to address the conflict and the humanitarian situation in the country at the level of leadership. He says President Kiir and Machar should not waste this chance to end the suffering of the South Sudanese people.
For me, I hope there should be something that should come to the bottom line of the peace agreement or the peace talks, because the top two leaders who are really, if they talk and agree on something, I hope the suffering of our brothers and sisters will come to an end.
Jeremiah Guy is an internally displaced person sheltering inside the UNMISS Protection of Civilians site in Juba. He says he and other IDPs welcome the meeting of the two South Sudanese leaders and urge them to bring peace to the country once and for all.
The two leaders in this country, they have to bring peace to the citizens of South Sudan. This is the hope of all IDPs. That is the hope of the people of South Sudan. Dr. Riek Machar and Salva Kiir to sit together as the children of South Sudan.
The meeting is being held under the auspices of the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, with the aim of bridging the major sticking points between President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The World Health Organization says the Ebola outbreak in Congo has largely been contained, bolstering hopes that quick response and a vaccine have prevented a full-blown epidemic. The outbreak has killed 28 people since it was first reported in early April in a small village. It spread to a second village, then to the provincial capital, raising concerns that neighboring countries were at risk. But the last known death occurred June 9th, and the disease has an incubation period of 21 days. That led the WHO to express cautious optimism that Congo's ninth Ebola outbreak may be over. Follow-up blood tests still must be taken. More than 3,000 people who came in contact with the victims have been inoculated with a vaccine. Developed during the deadly West Africa outbreak, the domestic and international response is likely to serve as a blueprint for future outbreaks. Zimbabwe is 40 days away from electing a president, members of parliament, and councillors. However, the opposition parties complain the Electoral Commission is biased against them and not being transparent. From Harare, reporter Kudzai Zanawashi reports.
Opposition parties say they have not yet received the voters' roll, even though the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, says it has been issued. Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesperson of presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa, who leads the main alliance of opposition parties.
No, we have not received the voters' roll. I think it's about the fact that ZEC is stoking fire. ZEC is destabilizing this country and the election by playing around with an important document in the process of trying to put in place a legitimate government for this country.
Linda Masarira is the spokesperson of the MDC faction led by presidential candidate Thokozani Khuphe. She says her team has also not gotten the voters' roll, but says they will collect it Thursday. She said the delay shows that ZEC is not prepared for the election. Elton Mangoma is the presidential candidate for the Coalition of Democrats, another group determined to end ZANU-PF's 38-year rule. He faults the ZEC chairperson, Priscilla Chigumba, for the problems.
We are clearly very unhappy with the way Chigumba is trying to give an impression that the voters' roll is ready, when in fact it's not ready. I have not heard any of the other opposition members who have received it. And if they have, it would be interesting to see how some will get it and others not getting it. But we are really sure that ZANU-PF already has it.
The British Embassy and the European Union Observer Mission say they have copies of the voters' roll. Some political candidates say they have gotten the rolls for the districts where they are running. But Sibanda says they want the national roll in an electronic format. Douglas Monzora is the Secretary General of the MDC faction that Nelson Chamisa leads and one of the drafters of the national constitution. He says the ZEC is breaching the constitution.
The voters' roll must be made available before the nomination of candidates, and it must be available in electronic and analyzable form. There is a breach of Section 62 of the Constitution, which entitles people to adequate information for the protection of a right.
Monzora says the right to a free and fair election enshrined in the Constitution has been infringed. He says opposition parties may take the ZEC to court. The ZEC boss, Chigumba, recently said now that an election date has been set, nothing will delay the vote. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
In World Cup news, Morocco was eliminated from the World Cup today as Cristiano Ronaldo scored after 4 minutes and Portugal held on for a 1-0 victory. Saudi Arabia also was knocked out of Group A with a 1-0 loss to Uruguay. The results mean that Russia and Uruguay will advance to the knockout round. Both are 2-0. Right now, Spain is facing Iran in the day's final match in Group B. It was the second 1-0 loss for Morocco, which had a number of opportunities but could not convert. Ronaldo's goal was his fourth in two matches, and he set a record for most international goals by a European player. All of the other African teams have today and tomorrow off. After an opening loss to Croatia, Nigeria will be in action Friday against, surprising, Iceland, which held Argentina to a 1-1 draw. For more World Cup news, be sure to stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. Today is World Refugee Day, and the migrant and refugee crisis has taken center stage around the globe. In the United States, President Donald Trump's administration has come under fire for its policy of separating children from their parents who come into the country illegally at the southern border with Mexico. In Europe, leaders announced urgent crisis talks on Sunday to try to build a comprehensive European Union policy on migration. France President Emmanuel Macron yesterday hosted Germany's Prime Minister Angela Merkel to discuss their approach ahead of the EU summit next week. My colleague Kim Lewis spoke with reporter Catherine Field in Paris about the outcome of the meeting.
The meetings have now wrapped up, and the key agreements that Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, and Emmanuel Macron, the French President, that they came to with regards to the migrants is that it needs to have, on the first place, a Europe-wide agreement. All the nations of the European Union, the heads of government who will be meeting next week in Brussels, they say that they have to come up with a new policy, a joint policy for how to deal with the migrant inflow. They say that by having different rules for different countries, the criteria for accepting asylum seekers, that has to now have just one uniform policy. On top of that, both leaders have said there needs to be an increase in the budget for the European Union border patrols. They need to have more at hand, not just in manpower, but also in ships and in terms of planes that can really monitor the borders.
Just looking at the migrants themselves, even though arrivals are down in Europe, the acceptance threshold is much lower than back in 2015.
Regarding actual migrants who are coming over the Mediterranean, particularly from Libya, both sides have put forward, along with other nations, have put forward a proposal that the EU, along with the UNHCR and IOM, set up a system of safe harbors nearby to Libya. Now, these safe harbors would have in place these sort of offices, accelerated procedures where migrants could be taken back there, their application for asylum would be processed there, the economic migrants would be filtered out from the asylum seekers, and that would all be done there on the Mediterranean coast in northern Africa. The other suggestion that has come forward is that Europe really look at having these also in places such as Libya and Niger, these countries that are transit countries, that they set up offices there as well. The example there is, of course, that so far this year, Libya and Niger, where these offices have been set up, 173 migrants have been resettled from there in France, the Netherlands, and Switzerland. They've been flown from those countries directly to Europe.
Can you talk a little bit about the Dublin Agreement and what that really means for migrants?
What that means at the moment is that if a migrant lands in Europe, the migrant has to apply for asylum in that country where he first lands. Now, that is generally Italy and Greece. This is putting an enormous strain on these countries. Even though the numbers are down, that is a big strain. What actually happens is some of these migrants realize they're not going to get asylum in Italy and Greece, so they move on to other countries. They move on to France, they move on to Germany. And in particular, in Germany, the opposition and some in the government are now saying, well, those migrants should just be sent back to Italy. If they land in Italy, they put in their first application for asylum in Italy, then send them back there. Now, the German Chancellor is saying, hang on, how are we going to do that? Are we going to deliver them back to Austria first and then hand them over from Austria to Italy? This is a very difficult process. This is really going to pull apart the whole idea of the European Union. So on that aspect, Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, is saying, well, I think we're going to have voluntary bilateral agreements between countries so as they can be sent back to that first country. On the other hand, Italy is saying, no, 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 we've got enough migrants, we have enough foreigners here, do not send any more back. So again, you're going to have the European Union looking at what you do about the migrants who, if you like, are floating around Europe trying to get asylum in various countries and still managing to be registered in other places such as Italy and Germany.
That was Catherine Field speaking with my colleague Kim Lewis. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Twenty past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The World Health Organization says the Ebola outbreak in Congo has largely been contained. Eritrea's president will be sending a delegation to Ethiopia to discuss a peace deal negotiated in 2000. And today is World Refugee Day, and the migrant and refugee crisis has taken center stage around the globe. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, has determined that domestic abuse and gang violence are no longer grounds for asylum in the U.S. Immigrant advocates and human rights activists are upset about the policy change. VOA's Adam Phillips examines the decision and spoke to a New York immigration attorney who opposes it.
In 2014, the Board of Immigration Appeals, the U.S. Justice Department's highest administrative court, found that a Guatemalan woman whose husband had repeatedly raped and beaten her and whose appeals to the local police had led nowhere should be granted asylum as a member of a persecuted social group. In his 2018 decision, Attorney General Jeff Sessions overrode that finding. He said that it was wrong and that, generally, claims by aliens pertaining to domestic violence or gang violence perpetrated by non-governmental actors will not qualify for asylum. He added that the mere fact that a country may have problems effectively policing certain crimes, such as domestic violence or gang violence, or that certain populations are more likely to be victims of crime, cannot itself establish an asylum claim. However, according to Mauricio Noronha, a staff immigration attorney at African Community Services in New York, the Attorney General's decision runs counter to the law.
Because the way that you analyze a particular social group is dependent on the country in which it takes place. So a domestic violence case where the government has not done anything about controlling this form of violence, Burkina Faso could be one of them, the Gambia is another, may work to get asylum. In the same way, a domestic violence case somewhere else where the government is actively prosecuting cases of domestic violence may not work to get asylum. So it is country-specific. This decision by Jeff Sessions does not take that into account.
Many people think that human rights and asylum law only target persecution by governments, state actors in the legal jargon, not individuals or so-called private actors. But Noronha says that the two can be intimately related. Female genital mutilation, for example, is usually sanctioned or performed by family or community members, not the government. But when the government treats the procedure as a private matter and ignores it, it enables the crime.
Forced marriage is another example where the private actor, again, usually the person who you've been sold to, and in particular your family, has sort of led you to a situation that you did not want to. It's not the government who's getting you into a forced marriage, but the government is usually unable or unwilling to control it.
In Sessions' view, domestic abuse victims are persecuted in the context of their personal relationships, not as members of a distinct social group whose members share, in his words, immutable characteristics, and are persecuted because they're members of that group. Noronha disagrees. He points to the special provisions many governments make to provide safe shelters, trauma assistance, and other benefits to domestic abuse victims as evidence that they are a group. He says most of them share the immutable characteristic of being female, and many are not able to escape their marriages. Such legalisms may seem cold and abstract, but Noronha says how the Attorney General's decision is interpreted and put into practice can make all the difference between life and death.
We are currently assisting a woman who fled horrible abuse at the hands of her partner. She was raped, she was beaten, and she fled this abuse to seek protection in the U.S. If she had been able to present her story before the immigration judge just the week before Sessions' decision, her chances of being granted asylum would have been considerably high. She had a very strong case, and this decision changes everything. Now she's subject to being sent back home, to the abuse, and to the risk of death.
The Attorney General's decision is certain to be challenged in the federal courts. Meanwhile, those who are granted asylum due to domestic abuse prior to June 11th remain secure in their status, at least for now. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Eritrea's president will send a delegation to Ethiopia to discuss Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's pledge to implement a peace deal negotiated in 2000. Under the deal, Ethiopia must give up occupied land back to Eritrea and honor a 2002 international court ruling that gave Eritrea control of the disputed town of Badame. Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki announced the overture today, saying the delegation will chart out a plan for continuous future action between the countries. Abiy's chief of staff, Fusuma Raga, said in a Twitter, the prime minister is ready to welcome the Eritrean delegation. Eritrea fought a 30-year war for independence from Ethiopia. It gained international recognition in 1993. But the conflict persisted, particularly on the disputed border. Between 1998 and 2000, a border war resulted in at least 70,000 deaths. Since then, tensions have remained high. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Huh? I am David Van, host of The Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical gem. I guarantee it.
It's the weekend, and whatever you're doing, you could use a little extra love. Music love, that is. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa, and I've got the perfect weekend show for you. I'm the king of the Kuntu, and the loving the way I do this uncle. First, a 30-minute playlist of the continent's best music. Then, a live studio interview and music performance by Leni Stern Trio. Think award-winning female electric guitar player falls in love with West African griot music. So lots of love coming to you this weekend. Don't miss it on Music Time in Africa, Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC. Yeah!
Hello, I'm Douglas Mpoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA.